Welcome to Roundhouse Roulette, a Walker, Texas Ranger podcast. Each week we recap and review one of the 200 existing Walker, Texas Ranger episodes randomly selected by Roundhouse Roulette. I'm Evan Dalton with my brother Adam.
Hello.
Whew. And a man who uses a stick of dynamite to open up his beer fridge, Mr. Bob Leahy.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah.
It's pretty effective.
Sure is.
Well, we'd like to thank you all for joining us as we revisit Chuck Norris's 1990s chemistry lesson. Today, we're going to recap and review Season 3, Episode 8. And this is The Road to Black Bayou, Part 2. And this is an episode where the Rangers stumble upon trouble while they're on a fishing trip in the swamps of Louisiana. But before we crawl out of the quicksand and wash off our overalls in the bayou in anticipation of tonight's crawfish boil, join us as we pull up a stool at CD's Bar and Grill. Oh, fancy meeting you guys here.
Indeed it is, Evan.
Well, I'm not going to beat around the bush here. Tonight, there's quite an intriguing offering on the beer menu.
It is indeed. It was provided by our friend Matt Swartz, who's a good friend of ours, and a fellow Magic the Gathering player who, Evan, you've thrown down with.
That's very true.
His brother makes this beer. His name is Gar. And what does Gar have in store for us tonight, Evan?
Well, tonight, we will be drinking a Red Jam Intriguing Red Ale. And this is from Gar's Beer Company, based out of Franklin, Tennessee, but this was also brewed by Straight to Ale, which is a brewery in Huntsville, Alabama. So it looks like some sort of collaboration. Now, you may be wondering, what is an intriguing red ale? And let me enlighten you. According to the Bar and Grill menu, the Red Jam is a beautiful red ale filled with aromas and flavors of strawberry jam and other dried fruit. Unlike many, quote, fruit beers, end quote, this beer is not sweet because it contains no syrups, fruit purees, or extracts. The Red Jam's intrigue comes from the unique combination of grains, hops, okay, sounds like beer, and honeybush.
Oh, there we go.
What? The beer, it smells sweet, but finishes dry with bitterness for balance. The Bar and Grill menu suggests that we enjoy this with soft cheeses, smoked meats, and possibly dessert.
Mmm.
This sounds like it'll be a perfect beer dessert.
Yeah. Shall we check this out?
I think so.
We shall. I had tabbouleh tonight, so I don't know if that's going to go very well.
It might put you in a jam.
So did I hear that there's no fruit in it, but there's fruit in it?
That's the magic of the honeybush.
Oh, so the red jam flavor comes solely from the honeybush.
And the unique combination of grains and hops.
Yeah, well, let's not beat around it.
Beat around your honeybush.
Oh, no. Oh, it definitely smells fruity.
Yeah. It is a little sweet, right? But not, yeah. Not fruit beer sweet. I know what they
mean. It's definitely dry.
It's like beer sweet.
It's got that classic ale flavor, but yeah, a little bit of intriguing strawberry fruitiness.
That's good.
Like a lot of the times with these, it's almost too malty and thick, but this is refreshing. It's more of an ale.
Now, let me tell you guys, I'm about to test this out with a little bowl here. I've got some dried mango.
Get some charcuterie?
Yeah, a little dried mango. I've got some pepitas for some crunch. Oh, and the only soft cheese I could find in my fridge, which is feta cheese. So, ooh. We're going to try this out with some soft cheese.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's been in my fridge way too long. It's not very soft.
Oh, it will be when you add Gar's red jam.
Isn't soft cheese like not, well, I mean, I know feta is soft, but it's
supposed to be like brie or something like that. Yeah. Okay. Now I'll try it with some of the mango here.
Well, wait, hey, what was that? How was that with the cheese?
I mean, it tasted like cheese and beer. It wasn't super great. Okay. All right. The mango's pretty good.
Some extra fruit sensation.
Oh, yeah, I think that adds to the intrigue.
So you're not knocking pairing beer with foods, is what you're saying?
I'm trying it tonight.
What's the last thing on your list there?
The pepitas.
Oh, okay.
Some lima beans.
They're dried pumpkin seeds, dude.
I don't know if it's just the week I've had, but I feel like I could drink like a gallon of this beer.
Definitely the week you had. No, this is pretty good. I like this beer.
Mm-hmm.
It's solid.
Now, I will tell you, I have seen an alligator gar before in the Everglades. It's pretty intense.
Okay, so Gar's Beer Company has an amazing logo. Evan, do you want to describe it?
Yeah, the alligator gar is a sort of prehistoric-looking fish with an extremely long snout that has these very snaggly teeth. They're kind of a very slow-moving, predatorial fish found in southern waters. And their logo is a pretty rad, old-school-looking gar in the shape of a G.
You know, I didn't know that that was an actual fish.
But his name is Gar?
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
You feel the texture in this can, too. It's very...
It's an artisanal can. I like it.
Yeah, it's very good. And he actually helped set up a brewery here in town. He was brewmaster over there for a while. Then he split off on his own and created this beer. I think he has a few other ones and kind of made the decision to have another brewing company make his beer so he could get it distributed. It's in a bunch of tap rooms here in Nashville, at least. And I dig it.
Yeah, I only got one complaint. I got no use for 12-ounce cans anymore. Give me 16.
You can't get enough. But thank you, Matt and Gar, for hipping us to this. And we're going to be savoring it today for sure.
Mm.
You know, I feel like a funky fish kind of fits this episode's vibe.
We didn't see a single fish in this episode.
I think it's very possible they could have caught an alligator gar when they were there. Let me quickly check their range.
We didn't see a single fish because they were all blown up with dynamite in the last episode.
Yeah.
Oh my god, this is perfect. Alligator gars are found all throughout the bayous of Louisiana, as well as the Gulf Coast. And my bad, I'm correcting myself right now. I believe the fish I saw in the Everglades was a Florida gar. Alligator gars do not make it past the panhandle of Florida. So they're basically in the Mississippi Delta, all throughout coastal Texas, all of Louisiana, and then the Gulf Coast of Alabama, Mississippi, and Florida.
Wow, so who knew that we would be doing a Louisiana-centric episode?
I know, it's like perfect. They could have caught an alligator gar. You know, one of the things that pops up on Google when you search alligator gar is, can alligator gar kill a human?
And?
Although they may look ferocious, they pose no threat to humans.
Yeah, but that doesn't answer the question.
There are no known attacks on people.
But maybe everyone they attacked, they killed. And they drug him down the bottom.
Ooh, they can pose a passive danger. The fish's eggs are poisonous to humans if ingested.
Okay, yeah, so it sounds like they kill a lot of humans because someone's tried to eat those. What about Googling alligator gar Chuck Norris? Let's do a full circle here.
All right, Chuck Norris.
Here's Chuck Norris eating a bowl of alligator gar eggs.
Here's a very strange article from 2007 on Wired, so before they became mainstream. Do not go swimming in Louisiana or Texas, and never mind the KKK's new sub-aqueous fleet or the lingering Katrina pollution or even the newly introduced Rectiflora beakii, the variegated prehensile duckweed native to Congo. No, you have bigger fish to flee. The alligator gar is hands down the single most frightened dinosaur inhabiting the American South, shown here next to Chuck Norris for scale. Click for large version.
That is going up on the website there.
But it's not actually Chuck Norris. It's just a guy with a beard.
Okay. Well, still.
It kind of looked kind of goofy, though.
You should see this one next to this dude. It's like 8 feet long.
Do people eat these sons of bitches?
They definitely fish for them.
Yeah.
We've done it. We've made the connection between Gar's intriguing red ale and Chuck Norris. So.
It wasn't that hard either.
No, it wasn't that hard.
No, first thing that came up.
Well, why don't we hit up the socials here? Evan, you've been doing a GIF of amazing scenes from all the episodes we've done, but we haven't really found a way to put them out until recently. But this last week's episode that dropped,
The Legend of Running Bear,
you had an amazing one of Chuck Norris demonstrating his Rip Van Winkle sneak attack.
Oh, yeah.
And it was pretty popular on social media.
Yeah, our buddy Gilbert from Talented Slackers saw right through this. He said, hey, don't fall for that hat trick, but...
Hat trick? That's better than Rip Van Winkle. Damn it. Hockey reference.
For listeners who haven't watched that episode or listened to our podcast, Chuck Norris essentially lies in a pile of leaves, fully covered, but leaves his hat and his gun lying out so that the people hunting him will be curious and try to pick up his hat. And while they're doing that, he pulls him to the ground and kicks him in the face, jumping out of the leaves to do so.
It's a classic move.
Unbelievable. Yeah,
it's pretty good. I mean, this is why falls in the Northeast are so dangerous. You never know if Chuck Norris is just going to grab you from a pile of leaves.
It can happen. Yeah. We heard from our buddy Kevin Monroe on Instagram.
He says, this is beautiful and further proof that the entire show is a fever dream from some 10-year-old kid playing cops and robbers.
I mean, that's pretty spot on.
Yeah, I nailed it.
I told him, I said, no doubt, and that kid got to play cops and robbers for 8 seasons while in his 50s. But we'll be doling out at least one GIF a week, and these will be Evan's GIF of the week. He's got a lot of them, so we've got a lot of catching up to do, too, right?
Oh, yeah.
They're also on each episode page on our website, roundhouseroulette.com. So
I'm watching the leaf one right now, and it still makes me laugh.
Want to pick up the next social thing we got from our friend from last week? Reached out to us again.
Yeah. Who, what is her name? Oh, Eliza?
Oh, you better get her name correct.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know.
Elisa?
Eliza? I would say it's Elisa.
So, Mark Alimo, superfan Elisa, let us know about this. I don't know what you call this. Like a, what do they say? Walker, Texas Ranger virtual meet and greet?
It's called a Wizard World Vault.
Yeah, Wizard World is actually known for doing fan conventions and stuff. Okay. And I guess they're adapting for the pandemic and doing a lot of this stuff online. And what they're doing is it's kind of like an online fan convention for the show Walker, Texas Ranger. And on this coming Saturday, so by the time this podcast comes out, this will have already happened. I told her, I was like, I can't believe we actually didn't hear about this or see about this anywhere online until a few days before it was happening. They're going to have a panel with Clarence Gilliard, Cherie J. Wilson, Judson Mills, and Nia Peoples.
That's pronounced Peplays.
And they're going to talk Walker. Guys, I think the three of us need to join this panel. I think we each pony up $4 and watch this thing on Saturday.
I got big plans this Saturday. Editing the podcast.
I'm getting my COVID shot on Saturday. So,
what time are you getting it?
Probably when this is happening.
You're telling me I'm going to have to do this?
Yeah, you're going in solo.
Oh, man. You're getting your COVID shot. You're editing the podcast.
Sounds like you're going to the Wizard World Signature Series Nostalgia.
The fact that they're getting 4 out of the 5 main cast members to sit and dish about Walker when we have a Walker, Texas Ranger podcast going on right now, I think we need to be there and see what happens. So we'll keep you guys posted about our Wizard World experience.
Thanks, Elisa. Mark Alimo, superfan, for letting us know.
One other thing here before we get into this episode. The woman who portrays the Louisiana waitress in this episode, her accent was insane, right?
Yeah, something else. Yeah.
I told you, I think she's Italian, right?
Right. Well... The actress name is Jo Ciampa, and I tried to find something where she was talking, and I found this YouTube video. I'm going to pull it up here. So, she isn't a normal speaking voice, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, she has a normal speaking voice and a totally passable American accent.
Yeah, and apparently she was born in New Jersey, but raised in Rome. And then brought back to Louisiana to film for Walker, Texas Ranger. And they're like, oh, you know a Louisiana accent, right? So anyway, yeah. It's a weird voice. But that's why I was like watching this video. But then I scrolled down in the comments.
Yeah.
From 6 years ago, Mike Simmons says, I never heard of her until I saw an episode of Walker Texas Ranger this morning. So that was 6 years ago. Then there was one reply. Me neither until I saw her last night on Walker. That was 1 year ago.
Can you please reply to that?
This is under my work account. Oh, this is actually Roundhouse now, so I can reply to it. Okay. So what I say, me too.
After
starting a Walker Texas Ranger podcast.
You have these accounts just to troll.
And to hear her real voice.
Well, we've got a ton to cover this week, so let's get on into it. If you're watching along at home and don't want any spoilers, although let's face it, this is part two of a two-part episode, hit pause and watch season 3, episode 8, The Road to Black Bayou, part 2, and then come right back to us. Welcome back. Let's dig in. This episode originally aired in November of 1994, and it opens up with a previous episode recap. And, you know, this recap's about 4 minutes long.
It was pretty action-packed, though.
After going through the entire Chairman saga...
On previous podcasts.
Yeah, we've seen quite a few episode recaps. Where would you guys rank this one?
It satisfied. It was pretty good. I mean, was it up there with the Lazarus recap? Probably not.
No.
That's the gold standard, isn't it? This makes me feel much better about the score I gave the episode last week because all of the action fit into 4 minutes. Actually, all the action would have fit into 30 seconds. So
yeah.
But it did have the Trivette super shot again.
Oh, so. That was epic in the Walker helicopter hang time.
Yep. Although I will say it also had a lot of Walker flashbacks and those dock a lot of points.
Yeah, pretty useless.
Then again, this was edited for TV, so there was a point where Trivette says, the hell with it, but he says, the with it.
On the TV recap?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Hell is blurted out, so
yep.
That added an extra point, I think. So, in case you missed, or in case you've forgotten last week's podcast, let me fill you in. Walker is getting really snippy because he hasn't taken a vacation day in like forever. And two different doctors tell him that he needs to take vacation, as do all his friends who he's snapping at. Mm-hmm. And he's all Alex. Like, I'm fine. And then they put him on probation and he's forced to take a vacation. So they take a vacation to Louisiana to go fishing for bass. Come on now. And of course, they stumble upon some seedy characters in the bayous of western Louisiana, and they've gotten themselves into some trouble here. They're not exactly sure how much trouble they've gotten themselves into, but we're aware of it. There's like some bad, good old boys cooking up some meth in these backwoods, and they don't like these rangers sniffing around. And when we last signed off on Walker, Walker and Trivette were walking back to their camp in the swamps, and something just wasn't feeling right. And there was a bad guy with a rifle behind a tree pointed right at him.
Right.
And it says, to be continued. And we're like, oh my God, is this guy going to open fire and just kill both of them?
Right. And cut to this episode, he doesn't. He turns around and walks away.
He just puts his gun down.
Yeah.
In that character, okay, Kyle Clayton, who's the son of the big bad of this series, Kyle is portrayed by Mike Norris and is Chuck Norris's son.
You can see where he gets his acting skills from.
I don't know. I thought he did pretty good. I think mostly his skeezy facial hair did the acting for him, though.
Yeah, those sideburns were sharp. They were very sharp. You could set your watch to those.
Yeah. He reminded me of someone else. I was like, oh, I know this actor. And I was like, no, I don't. It was just the sideburns.
Yeah, the sideburns were intense. It's like someone took a stencil to the side of his face and sprayed like some of that hair in a can onto his face.
Kyle's father, the big bad of this episode, is portrayed by David Huddleston, who you may know as the Big Lebowski.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty menacing in this episode and definitely gives CD a run for his money as far as high pants go.
Yeah, I'll say.
Oh, he wins. Hands down.
I think so, yeah.
Hands down.
He's very pear-shaped.
Yeah, and I think for the sake of this episode, I was thinking about it when I was watching this one. I was like, we just got to call him the Big Louisiana.
Or the Big Bayou.
Yeah, or the Big Sleazy.
Yeah.
I like it, the Big Sleaze. So Kyle goes and reports back to Pa.
The Big Louisiana.
Yeah, also known as Ferris. And he's all like, man, I don't like it. These Rangers, they've been sniffing around. They visited my girlfriend's place. And come to find out, a girlfriend's place is, it's not just home to sexy swamp rat Marie.
Portrayed by Joe Ciampa.
Right. And her son, Charlie, with a sick bowl cut and a baggy striped shirt.
The home improvement here.
So home improvement.
JTT, baby. Sign of the times.
There's clearly something else going on over there. And he's like, what are we going to do? We could move all the stuff. And the Big Sleazy's all like, no, we're going to do a lot more than move tonight. And we're all like, well, what are they going to do?
Yeah.
Back at camp. And for those of you who don't recall, the set for this camp is probably my favorite set of all time on Walker. They've got like the fake water coming up to the shore. And then they have one tent that is Trivette's, because, you know, Trivette's a city boy. He can't sleep in the open air with all the mosquitoes.
And alligators.
Yeah. But Walker and CD, they're clearly sleeping out in the open air. They've got their boat right up against the bank. And the moon is shining behind them. And the moon is like clearly on a wall that's angled away from the camera. So the moon's like got this really weird aspect ratio. And it's way too low in the sky. It's awesome. Walker's just kind of like meditating, and Trivette's saying to CD, he's all like, man, I know I've smelled that before. It's crank.
And he's talking about when he and Walker were back at Marie's house after they chased her son out of the woods because he had literally thrown a stick of dynamite right by them when he was fishing, but they didn't know that at the time.
He was probably fishing for alligator gar, we're pretty sure at this point.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Yeah. But while they were at their house, Trivette was like, oh, that smells like meth.
Yeah, and then he had to clarify. He's like, well, I only know because one time me and Walker busted these guys. And it's,
yeah.
Really? Yeah. Oh, really? Is that how you know?
Yeah, they're like, oh, let's make Trivette be the guy who knows what meth smells like. Come on,
Walker. Right. And then let's clarify by making sure we say that.
Right.
You know, say why right. He knows. Okay.
And no. CD's all like, crank? Like, what? What crank? And Trivette's all like, you know, speed, ice, methamphetamines.
And I like how CD's kind of like, he's like, oh, no, they might be making up a little crystal meth in the woods, but that's just like moonshine around here.
Yeah, right.
That's no big deal. Right. It's just for personal use.
Just for a little fun.
They just use it on the weekends.
And CD insists that it couldn't possibly be Marie that's doing it. He's like, oh, sweet thing like Marie. No way. No way.
They did dance in the last episode.
Yeah, CD was pretty creepy in the last episode, quite frankly. But, you know.
Yeah.
Anyways, Trivette's like, oh, we'll go check it out in the morning. I'm going to go tell Walker. And Walker is meditating, but he's also like in the midst of some weird Vietnam flashback.
Right.
Yeah, you basically see like, quote, young Walker fighting, quote, Vietnamese people in the jungles in blue sepia tones. And they're as annoying as they are jarring, I guess.
Yeah, the Vietnam, let's just get into it now. The Vietnam flashbacks in this whole series, guys, what do we got going on here?
They get a solid thumbs down from me.
Yeah.
They're trying to deal with the issue of PTSD in this, but they kind of are like tiptoeing around the subject quite a lot. And we'll get to it at the end of the episode, but it's just like, I just go on a fishing trip and you'll be fine. It's like PTSD is something that, you know, you can just get over by going fishing.
Yeah, you can just fish it away.
Right. Just like if, you know, white supremacists take over a TV station and then Walker Roundhouse kicks them, it's all better.
Problem solved.
To the credit, though, I mean, he had a concussion. And they're like, you need to take some time off. They weren't like, you're having Vietnam flashbacks. Or did they talk about it? He said, how often are the flashbacks? I think they do, right?
Yep. They talked about it last episode.
Yep.
Okay, so they did know about it. So mm-hmm. you're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Walker, Texas Ranger, tackles PTSD. And yeah, it's kind of weird. And they show some kind of gruesome scenes from the Vietnam flashbacks. He like throws a knife in a guy's throat. You know, they never show any blood, but it's still...
Yeah, I don't know. It's just...
It was a little off. That's all I would say.
Yeah. It's like the show is trying to be too artsy too, with like the weird atmosphere about the whole thing.
It never really goes anywhere either. That's the funny
part. Well, it does kind of pay off.
Sort of, but then it doesn't. We'll get there.
Well, yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there. Yeah. Let's move on.
So Walker's mid-flashback and Trivette taps him on the shoulder and Walker snaps around and grabs Trivette by the neck and is about to choke him out when he's shouted back to his senses. And he apologizes frantically, but Trivette's like, I'll talk to you in the morning, man. I'm going to retire to my tent here. Hope well,
he
you don't
doesn't
get-
really apologize frantically. He's like, in the calm Walker voice, he's like,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it wasn't like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I almost killed you.
Or it's like, oh, I'm sorry, Trivette.
I know. Trivette's like, I was hoping for a bigger apology than that, man. I think I'll go take this to the tent.
Yeah, so, you know, that was weird. Meanwhile, at Marie's house, the good old boys are over there, and they are setting her house on fire. And, you know, she's not a huge fan of that, but... The big sleazy's all like, you knew Kyle wasn't just cooking up gumdrops and candy in that shed. You knew there was something bad there.
Apparently Kyle was over there too, and he was kind of like, Dad, do we really need to burn down their house too? And big sleazy's like, yeah, whatever I say goes. So they're burning it down. We don't really know if Marie knew that they were cooking meth on her property, but she did know that something unsavory was going on in the shed in her backyard. And I mean, if Trivette can smell it as somebody who's never seen crystal meth before, I mean, the smell must have been pretty bad.
Clearly.
I mean, according to CD, you know, swamp gas kind of smells like a sack full of skunks at a chili cook-off. So it could have just been swamp gas. And I think that's what they were hoping would mask the smell. But, you know, Trivette's got a nose on him. He can smell meth a mile away.
Thank God for that.
CD sure can paint a picture with those words, huh?
Sure can. Gift. Sure gift. Can. He's got quite a few Texas-isms, so love it.
This might be the most we have seen CD active in an episode. It was kind of refreshing. I dug it.
So, you know, the next morning, the Walkers wake up and they're all like, well, I guess we should probably go check out this house because it smelled like meth and we got chased off by a woman with a shotgun. So we should probably go check it out again. Again, on the way there, CD's all like, well, you know, I there's no way Marie is caught up in this. She's such a sweet gal. There's no way a woman could possibly be involved in something like this. If this were like an episode in 2021, she would be like the crime lord.
Right. And, yeah. They'd flip it. Yeah.
Yeah. But this is 1994 and the house has been burnt down. But, you know, they're walking around, they're surveying the rubble there. And Walker's all like, oh, there's lots of glass. And he starts listing off chemicals that are used to make meth.
He also says there's a sign of a struggle.
Yeah, yeah. So after noticing that this is a meth lab that was burnt down, he enlists his tracking skills.
Rock, I wonder how many kids actually made crystal meth after like he just read all the ingredients for it off on national TV.
Right. He's probably responsible for a huge meth boom in the mid-90s. Yeah.
In college, I recall a...
You made some?
No, in chemistry class, we had to like make certain compounds. And one of the students in class asked our chemistry professor about making one of the compounds in meth. And he was like, I'm not a moron, but you are. And I think that kid failed out of class.
Oh, he's like, I signed up for a chemistry class so I could learn how to make crystal meth. And then I was going to drop out of school.
Not only that, he was going to make it for one of his projects.
Yeah, and then that teacher like turned into Walter White, and they started like a side business that you had no idea that's what went down.
Hey, you know, whatever pays the bills. So Walker's like, the signs of a struggle. The woman and her son were taken captive. I don't know how you tell that from.
Yeah, I don't know.
Cherokee, I mean.
Yeah, he's got the tracking skills. You know, he's like, oh, I'm going to go after them. Trivette and CD, why don't you guys go report back to our hashtag old friend, the sheriff. And they're like, oh, he's only 2 hours away. We'll get cracking.
Right. No kidding. And while CD was talking about like the crystal meth earlier and all that stuff, he also was like talking to Trivette about how Walker, he went through a lot when he was in Vietnam, and he was the kind of guy they would just drop down into the woods and he would just go take care of business on his own.
Yeah, he says he's a one-man recon team.
So we've already been set that up when Walker's like, yeah, I'm going to go try to track him down on my own. And Trivette kind of tries to talk him out of it, but he said, oh no, it'd be better if it's just me. You know, they're both thinking that, oh no, this is kind of parallel to his Vietnam flashbacks. A little dovetailing with the Vietnam storyline.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you give him too much credit here. So, you know, Walker gets all hashtag into the woods. And Trivette and CD, you know, they go back to CD's trusty boat and daggum thing won't start.
Yeah, and it's a good thing too, because the bad guys are on the way in a rival boat. And the beast of a man who was knocked off the side of like a riverside restaurant by Walker after taking repeated roundhouse kicks to the face is at the helm with somebody else driving. And he's hanging off the front with a stick of dynamite.
Yep. His name is Bull Clayton.
He's one of my favorite bad guys in this episode.
Oh, totally.
Oh, yeah.
If you were to think, like, what's the most efficient way to kill somebody? It'd be a boat by dynamite throwing?
Hell yeah.
Well, yeah, because they'd be like, right. Oh, well, they were just fishing and forgot to let go of the dynamite in their own boat.
Okay.
That's okay. How they died, officer.
I also think you're overthinking this, but yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's just the first thing that came to mind for me. So, I mean, you know.
Some plausible deniability there for sure.
I've never tried to kill anybody with dynamite this year.
Okay. So, you know, Trivette's like, CD, you got to get this thing started because they're throwing dynamite at us. And CD's all like, dadgummit, this thing's harder to start than a middle-aged woman.
Yeah, I was like, what? Like, what?
Maybe for you, CD.
Ooh. CD's been hitting on a lot of middle-aged women, I guess.
Apparently
so. Hasn't been doing it very well, though, I guess.
Which, I guess we did see him do that in the last episode, so.
Oh, it's true. Yeah, he
put on his Cajun swarm dance to Marie.
Yeah. So, you know, they're unable to get this boat started, and it takes these Bayou dudes three tries to get a stick of dynamite into the back of their boat. In the meantime, Trivette's made a Molotov cocktail out of a gasoline tank and thrown it at them. So, you know, explosions galore here, which is awesome.
Yeah, but it was great.
They blow up CD's old boat.
They have like a faraway shot of the boat and you're like, no, it's going to blow up. And they show some smoke coming out of the boat with two people on the boat that's far enough away that you can't tell if it's actually Clarence Gilliard and Noble Willingham. And they jump into the water, cut to a picture of the front of the boat, cut to another faraway shot, and the thing just blows to smithereens.
CD's boat.
Gone.
Crying shame.
In an epic explosion.
I mean, it's a good way to go. Downed by a stick of dynamite in the bayou.
Oh, yeah.
Sleeping with the gators tonight.
Yeah, so I guess Trivette and CD just held their breath for what seemed like minutes while the redneck crew in their boat were circling trying to see if the bodies came up or if they're still alive. And then we finally cut to the edge of the river, and Trivette had pulled CD into some brush, and CD seems to be injured.
Yeah, big time.
He's got a big woe is me thing going on too. He's like, just leave me behind, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Jimmy's like, no way, big dog.
Right, yeah.
And while the bad guys are trying to track him down in the boat, there's a gratuitous amount of vamping. They say like eight different times. Right, you see anything? No, I don't see anything. What about you see anyone?
Yeah.
Where are they? Do you see them? I don't see them. And I think a couple times they even like play it over again.
Use the same audio. Yeah.
They're like, oh, they'll just cut this out for syndication.
Yeah. You see anything? No, I don't. You see anyone? No.
Yeah. Well, they just wanted to show that they looked hard enough. You know,
they really did. You know, but yeah, as Adam said, you know, Trevette's able to get CD onto the solid ground, and they're going to try to get these guys to chase them into the woods and then circle back and steal their boat. But CD is, as Bob said, he's feeling, you know, sorry for himself, and he's ready to call it a day just then and there. Yeah, he's done.
Towel. And he kind of tells Trevette, he's like, look, we've been friends a long time, and you can leave me here. It's okay. You're like, dude, Trevette's not going to leave him there. But Trevette turns and walks away, doesn't even say goodbye. And you're like, they left CD in the woods to be caught by these two redneck hunters?
Brutal but true.
Not soon after, the two bad guys who were in the boat throwing dynamite come upon CD just there. And they both draw their rifles on him and say, where's the other one?
Of course, he starts mouthing off to him, too.
Oh, yeah.
He had a few good one-liners.
Yeah, he
says you can sleep off drunk, but you can't sleep off ugly.
And that definitely did not make them any less angry.
Yeah, in fact, their reaction was pretty great. They both like,
yeah, it
their was. Faces just got. Oh, I'm so mad at that.
It's like they'd never been made fun of before in their lives.
Yeah, they took it pretty hard.
They also took some landed blows from Trevette pretty hard.
Flying Trevette.
He was like a trapeze artist.
Oh, flying yelling Trevette, too. He felt the need to start yelling 3 or 4 seconds before he actually hit them.
Yeah.
That's good.
Obviously, you know, we knew that Trevette wasn't going to leave Big Dog there just to be taken. He was hiding behind a tree. And like you just said, he was like, oh, before he even started attacking, and kind of gave him a heads up that he was about to wreck house. And he didn't wreck house enough because they ended up back where they started, except both of them were now at gunpoint.
Yeah.
And CD and Trevette were held captive by these two redneck hunters.
By Bull and Smalls, I think is the other guy's name. Yeah, it didn't work out so well.
No. Do we pick up on Walker here?
We do, yeah.
In this day, he decided to wear a bandana around his neck, which he has done before in previous episodes. So I was like, oh, he was just wearing a bandana around his neck because, as we mentioned last week, I mean, he's literally wearing a sweatshirt with a flannel shirt over it in the bayou.
With a jean jacket, too, I think, right? He's got the denim going on, too.
This episode, it's like a denim shirt. But it looks like he's got a polo shirt on under it.
Yeah.
It's like another collar.
And he has like a light purple bandana tied around his neck, like a Texas ascot.
It's his fishing uniform.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's like tracking these guys in there. Two boats with Marie and her son, Charlie.
Right. In the big Louisiana, pretty much told his son to take them back to
the quarry, baby.
Yeah. So that's where they're being taken to, where presumably they're going to be killed because they're witnesses to this whole meth operation. So Walker's kind of trailing these guys who are going down the river with them on the boat. So Marie and her son, who the whole time, like in this episode, the kid's like mouthing off to these Cajun rednecks. Oh, the Rangers are going to get you. The Rangers. Like, they say Rangers a million times in this episode, right?
Oh, yeah. The Rangers will never lose.
Stuff like that. It's like, I guess it's just ingrained in all Louisiana folk as well. Not just Texans know about the Rangers.
Why does Charlie not have an accent? Can we unpack that?
Who's Charlie? The kid?
Yeah.
The kid, yeah. If any, yeah. I mean, he's born and raised down the swamp.
Maybe he isn't, though. Maybe he's Marie's stepson.
Maybe she's actually love interest. Maybe she was like a school teacher and picked up Charlie or something like that.
Okay.
I mean, at the scenes coming up will justify this, so I'm just throwing that out there now.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so Walker's, you know, tracking him along the riverbank, and, you know, just what I'm about to point out that, you know, he's just like standing out in the open, like completely visible with a blue denim shirt on, black pants and a bright purple bandana around his neck. And he's just like peeking out from behind the Spanish moss. And, you know, the only person who's actually looking around is this kid, Charlie. And he sees Walker and he's like, oh, but Walker holds his finger up to his mouth like, shh, don't tell anyone.
Right.
But this schlub in the boat who goes by the name Elmo is all like, you seed something. What you see? And the kid's like, I didn't see anything. He's like, you definitely saw something. And but Elmo doesn't look.
Yeah.
It's just right. Like, it's like, so oh, you saw see? Something, where, but.
What are you looking? He's like looking right at the kid. Like, what are you looking at?
Right.
It's like, yeah. Look to where he was looking.
Right. So Elmo should have been looking, because as soon as they sort of pull their boat ashore, Walker's like, I got to take these guys out. So how do I do that? What's the best way to do that? And he looks down and he's like, okay, a rock. And I'm like, all right, yeah, Walker can probably throw like a 99 mile an hour fastball with pinpoint accuracy. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, just do that. It's like, no, he's not going to do that. He's going to use the tools he has at hand. And so he uses that lovely purple bandana, unties it from his neck and uses it like a sling.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Because we all know that that would be more accurate and it would go a lot faster than if he just threw it.
I think if any of the three of us tried to do that, we'd probably hit ourselves in the face with it.
Oh, yeah. I'd be in the but hospital him, almost immediately.
First time.
He bullseyes Elmo and the sound effect was like the guy just got punched, Walker yeah. style. It was great.
But it got him in like the shoulder?
Yeah, he gets nailed in the shoulder. He's like, ah!
But he's not done with the sling either. He uses it again.
It does. So Kyle's all like, oh man, the ranger's in the woods. And he sends his brother Smalls out to go after Walker. And so Walker just like prances off into the woods because, you know, he's got no gun or anything. And Smalls has a big rifle and he's chasing after Walker. And as Adam said, they said ranger so many times. And in this case, Charlie and Marie both start shouting, look out, Mr. Ranger! Mr. Ranger!
They're coming
Mr. Ranger!
You.
They're coming for you! It's like, okay, he knows. So he's getting chased by this dude with a rifle, and like the guy jumps out from behind a tree, and Walker's just like completely in the open. And the guy doesn't aim his rifle at Walker, he just stands there while Walker takes aim and slings a rock that hits the tree right next to the guy's face. And he's like, oh, maybe I should point my gun at this guy and shoot. And that's when he decides to try that, and Walker's already run off.
He had some sweet lateral moves as he was running, too, to avoid any shots.
Serpentine.
Smalls lines up a shot, and he's like, oh, can't make it, because he's doing the serpentine.
Yeah, man. So, you know, they get to like a clearing. Smalls is looking all around. He's like, oh, is he up in a tree? Is he? And, you know, good on Smalls, because 9 times out of 10, Walker is up in a tree ready to jump down and kick you. Like, that's going to happen. Or maybe he'll pull you up into the tree. But in this case, Smalls encounters a little patch of mud. If the viewer is wondering, is that supposed to be quicksand? Smalls goes to himself, did he end up in the quicksand?
right.
This quicksand right here?
So quicksand forms when a spring pops up through limestone and the water coming up from underneath kind of mixes with sediment to make this really weird proportion of like sediment and water. Anyways, they've definitely made some quicksand on set here. That's for sure.
Yeah, it looks like they dug a ditch and threw some water in it and then like a bunch of dirt into it. But Smalls is like, did he fall into the quicksand?
Did he have a one-liner here?
Walker materializes out of nowhere and says, I'm not that dumb.
Bam!
Slugs him and knocks that guy into the quicksand.
Walker uses the oldest trick in the book. He uses the quicksand as an interrogation technique.
Western 101.
Yeah, for sure. He's like, you're going to tell me what I need to know. Where are they taking everyone? And he's all like, wait, you can't let me sink. You're a lawman. And then Walker just walks away. And the guy flounders thinking he's going to die until he admits what's going on. And then Walker throws him a stick and lets him out.
But he tells him, you're going to show me the way to where the meth lab is.
He pulls the guy out of the mud and he's like completely covered in mud. Like totally, as you would be.
Right.
Next scene, we see Walker stalking the two boats with this guy in tow, being gagged by his purple bandana, by the way. And
it's Walker's kink.
For sure. And this guy, his shirt and pants, they're all like completely clean. It's like he took a bath first.
Well, Walker's like, I don't want you to get any dirt in the boat. Just go in the river for a second.
Just nice. Seems considerate.
Yeah, and a waste of time when you're trying to track down your buddies, but okay.
Ah.
While Walker's doing this whole quicksand thing, Kyle's trying to deliver the kidnapped Marie and her son to his father. And Marie's kind of like, well, maybe I'll take one for the team here and they won't kill us if I make it with Kyle here.
Use my southern charm.
Yeah, how does she kind of proposition him here?
You got the feelings for me.
I can tell you got the feelings for me. And then she kind of like lowers her shirt to one shoulder for the rest of the episode because she's like essentially propositioning people for the rest of the episode. Right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
It's really weird. But Kyle's kind of like, no, you're just trying to trick me. I'm going to deliver you to my father and he's going to kill you.
So he's tracking them all to the quarry. That's where the full-on meth lab is, I guess. Kyle and everyone have brought Marie and Charlie to the quarry, to this barn, and Ferris is there, and he's all like, you know what you have to do. And Marie's all like trying to seduce him.
Let's describe Ferris here. So Ferris is the big Louisiana. He's an old man, at least the same age as CD. He has a fatter stomach, higher pants. He's pretty much every Southern bad guy you've ever seen in a movie. He's got an evil grin smirk. And this is the kind of character that David Huddleston personified in a lot of his roles. There's actually an awesome quote from him. He says, even when I play heavies, I try to play them with a twinkle in my eye. Besides, it makes him seem much meaner when he does kill.
That's a creepy dude.
But he definitely has a twinkle in his eye.
Oh, for sure.
He delivers every line, and it's creepy as hell.
Yeah. Yeah.
He does a really good job with it.
Sam Marie's all like, I know you're a powerful man, and I need a place to bed now, and I know you don't want to kill me. So while Marie's trying to seduce Kyle's father, she's like, Kyle wasn't man enough to handle this.
And this could be the most awkward scene in a Walker episode, maybe.
It's definitely creepers.
Yeah, because
pretty cringy.
As we were just saying, this guy, he's an old man in high pants, and he's the ringleader of this
meth swamp
conglomerate.
Yeah, a meth swamp conglomerate. And he looks like he's out of like the 1950s the way he's dressed.
Yeah, he's like cruising around his Lincoln convertible.
Big suspenders. Yeah.
So it's weird when Marie, who's at least half his age, tries to seduce him after trying to seduce his son and saying, you'd always pat my back when you're at the restaurant and we could do some things, you know, if you don't kill us. And he's kind of like, what does he say?
He's like eyeing her up and down, right? And got this. It looks like he's looking at a bucket of fried chicken. And Kyle is like, wait, what? What? And her son's like, no, man, no.
And she's like, quiet now, Charlie. This is adult talk.
I know adults are talking here. And he's like, well, maybe after we finish up here, I'll have to pay you a visit.
Before you die, and this is what I do to you. And then he goes over to her ear and whispers something in her ear that we don't hear, and then she screams like,
no! Right. He tells her what he's going to do. Now, what did you guys think he told her to elicit that response?
I think that he said he was going to eat her son. What are the odds?
I imagine that he was like, I'm going to take you to my apartment and I'm going to feed you to my gerbils.
Bob, what do you think you said?
I'm going to take off my suspenders.
I actually like that you didn't hear it. It added to the creepiness of the bad guy for this episode. And his creep factor was at 100%.
Definitely the gerbils. You know it.
Yeah. He probably isn't a gerbiling. So anyway, the son was like, I have feelings for her, and you're trying to get with her daddy. You can't do that.
He's like, well, we're still going to kill them.
And he's like, what? No, what? Like, just let her stay with me, dad. And he's like, son, what I say goes, or something like that.
Yeah, he kind of pulls rank a bunch of times this episode. Meanwhile, Trivette and CD are being traipsed through the woods with their hands bound on their way to the meth lab, and Walker is tracking them down. He's got a sick purple bandana now on his head. What happened to the guy that he captured? What did he do to that guy?
When he was spying on the other guys, that guy was like, hey, help me out.
All right.
Because so he had the bandana tied around. Yeah.
Yeah, he put him in a sleeper hold.
And then just dumped him.
No, no. Then he gingerly removed the bandana and retied it on his head. Oh, right.
Yeah. But yeah, the way he threw him on the ground was just discarding of garbage, too.
Yeah.
He gave him a sleeper hold. The guy passed out. Then he just rolled him on the ground like a bag of garbage. And presumably, he had to go down and get the bandana to put on his head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he's going Rambo style now.
For sure. Then he's tracked down Trivette and CD, and he gives them the signal with a mirror. He uses a signal mirror to reflect to them.
And so CD kind of fake falls over, and Trivette goes down to help him, and then they start mouthing off against the rednecks, CD using all his sass.
Yeah.
And he's got a lot.
They're getting in their heads.
All right. And Walker, he doesn't scream before he strikes, but in this case it's like a drive-by punching. He just like runs up next to the big guy and just like punches him over. And the other guy gets taken out big time too.
Yeah. The biggest guy, who's a monster, who Walker literally kicked about 7 times before he got nailed into the river in the last episode. Walker literally does a sleeper hold with his legs to take the guy out.
That's some judo training right there. Then CD and Trivette are busy taking turns punching the other guy in the face.
Walker saves the day. Didn't see that coming. CD and Trivette are now free, and they all need to go to the meth lab to save Marie and her son Charlie.
Yeah, actually, once he frees them, they're all like, oh yeah, let's get out of here. And I was like, yeah, they don't really have any obligation to what's going on at this point. Like, they really could just leave. Like, they were almost blown up, kidnapped, murdered. They could just leave.
Or call in the local law enforcement.
So, of course, you know, they've got to go and break up this meth ring and put an end to all this once and for all. This is around the same time that Elmo, the guy who got nailed in the shoulder by a rock earlier, is assigned to go kill Marie and her son. But Marie's actually a pretty
resourceful swamp rat.
Quite resourceful.
Elder Clayton called her a swamp woman.
He's like, her? She's just a swamp rat.
Something like that. But yeah, she's a pretty resourceful one for sure.
So she used the sharp edge of some metal to cut her ties on her hand, and she untied her son. They pretend to be tied up when Elmo comes in. And she swings a shovel at him, but he grabs the shovel and slaps her.
Right, so they get another slap of her. Oh, man, this woman's been through enough. She's had to proposition 2 creepy bad guys to try to save her life, each time getting slapped, and then she got slapped again.
Then her son tries to stick up for her, but, you know, that bowl cut, you'd think it would be protective, but no. Elmo gets a good fistful of this kid's hair, and he's about to teach this kid who's boss. When Walker comes in from out of nowhere, grabs Elmo's hair, pulls it back, and as Elmo is screaming in pain, Walker says, "Hurts, doesn't it?" and punches the guy out.
That was so good. Oh, I love that.
Meanwhile, Trivette, you know, he's rounding up the other goons that are around the area, and Walker's like, okay, you know, I got to break up the actual meth lab now. I got to find everyone else. And Kyle is like instructing these guys to grab all these empty boxes. And they're like, okay, we're going to delicately pack up each one of these glass bottles in this room. As soon as I saw like the temporary shelving with all the glass bottles on it,
Yeah. So there's literally the plastic shelves that you buy for your garage. There's a row of 4 of them, and all 4 of them have bottles of crystal meth on them. Then you pan over, and there's another row of at least 4 shelves with the ingredients for crystal meth on them. Now, one of the things that they nailed in the reboot pilot of Walker, Texas Ranger was what happens in this scene.
Totally.
The bad guys are all trying to pack up what's left of the meth and get it out of there so they could burn the place down to the ground and find another site to start the operation again. And Walker sneaks in the back. And as soon as you see him sneak in the back, you know that all the shells are like set up like dominoes and all of them have the crystal methamphetamine and glass bottles on it. You know he's going to push that sucker over, which is exactly what Jared Padalecki does in the pilot of Walker.
Mm. And meanwhile, Marie, she's actually grabbed the gun from Elmo, who was dispatched by Walker, and she's found Ferris Clayton. And now she's got him at gunpoint. And he's all like, "Oh, you're much more clever than I thought you were." And she's like, "If I was about to do to you what you were about to do to me, what would you do?" And he's like, "I reckon I'd do something real mean."
Right. He's like, "But you won't do it because you're not me."
So true.
With a twinkle in his eye and high pants and the roundest front on a man I've seen in a while.
Yeah, he's like the Penguin. Cue Walker busting through the front doors of the barn with a couple of perps. She's distracted briefly, and that's enough for Ferris to grab the gun from her. He aims the gun at Walker, but Charlie starts running at Mr. Ranger, and there's this really awkward scene that plays over like three times of the gun firing and Charlie hitting the dirt.
So you're like, the kid got shot? What? And then it flashes back to Walker in Vietnam, which there had been this scene shown multiple times throughout both part one and part two of this episode of a Vietnamese child being shot and Walker coming to the child's aid in the woods and carrying him off. And I think the reason why Clayton was able to shoot him was the Vietnam flashback prevented Walker from having his normal superpowers that would have prevented this whole situation from happening.
I just thought of something I didn't think of before. Is it weird that the kid is named Charlie and he has this like link to a Vietnamese kid?
Oh, that's what they called the Vietnamese?
U.S. soldiers would be like, "Charlie's after us." Like that's what they refer to the Viet Cong as, Charlie.
Oh, that seems very tongue-in-cheek and probably not a coincidence.
Right.
Wow. Okay. Well, so yeah. The kid hits the dirt and you're like, they just shot a kid? No. What?
I shot a kid.
The big Louisiana just took out a kid.
So commercial break, you know, and then after the commercial break, you see him get shot again, same scene. And then Walker is like immediately at the kid's side, as is his mother. And before you can be like, doesn't Ferris Clayton still have a rifle that's aimed at Walker?
Right.
Apparently he had to take that long to
reload.
Maybe it was a musket.
Yeah, so that gave CD enough time to wander in, push the muzzle of the gun down, and do a really slow motion punch. And I had to rewatch this a couple of times because
had to or really wanted to
both. Both. CD punches him. I think they told him to just do it in slow motion because when Ferris falls down, he just falls really slowly. But it's clearly like filmed in real time.
I didn't watch it again, but I did notice there's something.
He just kind of like slowly curls to the ground, and Noble Willingham just sort of stands at this awkward angle.
I kind of didn't notice that because I was like, "Damn, CD just decked him out, and that was sick."
Yeah, it was great. And he's all like, "That's for interrupting our fishing trip. It's like not for like murdering people or trying to blow me up or."
Right.
Just almost shooting a child or anything else. It's for interrupting our fishing trip.
Yeah, yeah. Now, where's the meth?
Now, where's that crank? So, yeah, then they pack all the bad guys into the back of this truck.
All the younger bad guys climb into the back of the truck. But as we mentioned, the big Louisiana is an elder man who is round like the Penguin. And I was like, that guy probably couldn't even climb up the back of the truck if he wanted to. And CD, he has him step onto the lift gate.
Yeah, the hydraulic lift.
Yeah, that you have on the back of a packing truck. And is kind of chastising him as he lifts him like an old-ass man into the back of a truck. I mean, there's probably nothing more humiliating than you know, you just got arrested, right? And you can't even ably climb into the back of a truck. You need like a lift gate to do it. Yeah. That's how big you are.
And he's all like, you haven't seen the last of me.
Oh, that made the episode for me.
It is.
I was like, yes.
And CD is like, well, no, I'm still looking at you because I have to move you up real slow on this lift gate.
For those curious viewers out there, he does not return as an actor on the series. So
there hopefully is some fan fiction. All right, let's pull it up. Guys, there's another site that has fan fiction, and there's a chapter called Back to Black Bayou.
Nice.
I mean, I haven't read this yet, but we'll definitely post this up. Someone continued this story, and let's just see if he returned.
Walker's going to have a steamy night with Marie. You know it.
Oh, it also has Gage and Sydney in it.
Oh.
Oh, my God. Paradigm shift.
Yeah.
Mind blown.
So he did come back. It was just in fanfic.
So Walker wanders over to the meth lab and he's looking for some evidence or something, and he finds a big duffel bag, and so he grabs that and jumps into the cab of this truck that's about to drive away. Charlie and Marie walk up and they're all like, Mr. Ranger, thank you so much. I hope you'll come back again. Will you come back? We don't even know your name. And he's like, it's Walker.
Yeah, and Charlie's like,
thanks, Mr. Walker.
He's like, you come back for dinner sometime? My mom's a real good cook. And he's like, I don't know. He's like, my mom's the prettiest one in the bunch in the whole bayou. Like he's like pimping out his mom to Walker.
I know.
But, I mean, you could see he learned that because she was pimping herself out, too.
I know. They learn quickly.
Yeah.
Them's adults talking, man.
Yeah. Well, he grew up quick in this episode, that Charlie.
And Walker's like, what do I have to do to never see you again? Oh, I'm going to throw you this duffel bag full of money.
Right.
Here, take this. I found it in there and no one knows it exists. Except for all of the bad guys in the back of this open bed truck that just saw me throw a duffel bag with millions of dollars to you.
Yeah, so all the people who were part of the drug operation that knew what was in the duffel bag, which was like a ton of drug money, they saw Walker give it to people who they knew they were. So while they're in prison, they can easily make a phone call and say, yeah, I know where all that drug money went. These people have it.
Mm-hmm. Or while they're being tried in court, they can say, this law officer gave evidence to these bystanders.
Right. Well, who are you going to believe, Walker or some meth heads?
Fair. Around when he does that, all the chemicals in the meth lab, they mix, and the meth lab explodes. An explosion that is sheerly epic.
Yeah. What was like the fireworks shooting out of that? Like, I didn't get it, but it was
it's great. Like a giant column of flame. They go back and, you know, they're booking everyone. They finally meet up with their hashtag old friend, the sheriff. He's like, oh, you guys should really stick around. I'll teach you guys how to actually fish. And from what we saw, they need some help fishing because they didn't catch a damn thing. They caught a stick and got really excited about it and took a photo of it. So they definitely have no clue what they're doing out there. CD and Trivette are like, oh, no, we got to get back. But Walker, you should stick around and go fishing. And we should probably remind you that you're still on administrative leave for another week. And Walker's like, okay, fine.
Right.
Cut to, you know, a week later at CD's, they're reminiscing about this story. And CD's got all his film that's been developed, but of course, his camera fell in the bayou, so his film didn't come out all right, so classic.
A classic CD.
Yeah. And then Walker just walks right in, and he's like a new man.
Yeah, he's presumably fresh back from his trip because he stayed behind to fish and get a little more relaxation in.
Mm-hmm.
CD pulls up a gift from behind the bar and says, we got something for you, Cordell. And you're like, well, it's not his birthday. Maybe it's thank you for not killing us in a Vietnam flashback.
I don't know what it is.
It's a welcome back.
It's an enormous sidearm with a belt.
I think this is what he uses for the rest of the show.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's an ornate pistol. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Trivette says, it wasn't cheap. Presumably, they all pitched in on it, and he was a little sore for how much he had to pitch in for it.
Right. It's like, you know, because nothing says welcome back after recovering from PTSD than, like, here's a gun.
Yeah, I don't know if you can just buy, like, it's Texas, so I guess anything's possible, but...
There are law officers in Texas. They can buy whatever gun they want.
In part one of this series, Alex is like, I could actually teach you guys how to fish. You need me to come with you. Well, she was grilling all of them for not being able to catch any fish or bringing any fish back with them. So the last part of this episode, she's like, Walker, you didn't even catch any fish either. And Walker delivers a joke with really terrible delivery, right?
I only remember the freeze frame. I think I blocked it out of my memory.
He goes, I'm not going to come back here and tell you I caught a fish. All right. This big, and he holds his hands really close together. I caught a fish this big, and puts his arms way out. And then it's like, ah.
Okay. That's much larger than a bass, so it probably was an alligator gar. Just throwing it out there.
Okay, yeah.
Had to be.
Well, that about sums up this episode. We'd love to give a shout out to our friend and collaborator, Adam Lauritsen, who's been drawing the amazing Walkerstrations featured on our social media. Be sure to check out his other art on Instagram at @imaginationrunamuck. When we come back, it'll be time for us to each rate The Road to Black Bayou Part 2 on a scale of 0 to 10 boots to the face, resulting in our patented Roundhouse Roulette episode ranking, the complete results of which are available on our website, roundhouseroulette.com. Don't go away.
In the Louisiana Black Bayou, a flannel-clad Cajun scoundrel tracks his latest prey.
Where in the heck that ranger go? Clayton will feed me to the gators if I don't bring him in. Can't risk him out in our meth lab. Ooh, a sand trap? Did he go into the quicksand?
I'm not that dumb. I'm going to ask you this only once. Where's the big Louisiana Black Bayou meth lab?
Oh, nah, you get me out of here. Give me your hand. Hey, where are you going? You come back here, man. Hey, what are you doing, man?
1 hour later.
Ranger!
2 hours later.
I'm up to my chest hair. Ranger, help me here.
3 hours later.
Okay. Ranger! Psst. It's dang near my mouth. I'm ready to talk. Help me!
Thought a few hours in the Louisiana mud might change your tune.
Oh, thank...
Good, you shut up. You can still breathe out your nose. While I've got you captive, let me slow roll you a little advertisement. We here at Roundhouse Roulette have pledged to deliver the light of Walker, Texas Ranger, to the world. If you'd like to lend us a hand in that mission, please share the pod with a friend or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Likewise, if you're looking for the finest mercantile this side of the Mississippi, we've recently added some fresh merch at roundhouseroulette.com or hit up our Patreon page. Most importantly, though, thank you for listening and making this crazy journey worthwhile. Okay. Grab a hold of this here log and I'll slowly pull you out of your quicksand hideaway.
From there, the ranger saved his friends amidst Vietnam flashbacks, blew up the meth lab, and propositioned a swamp woman. All in a day's work. But enough of my yakking. We'll let you get back to the show.
Well, I think I've washed all the quicksand off of my clothing at this point, but as we've established, it just comes right off. Let's see. Okay, I guess I'm going first this week. I was pretty dismayed by the bird sounds in this episode.
I didn't even notice.
Even in the recap, I was reminded of last week's episode when they're waiting for the helicopter to come in. And as the helicopter's coming in, you hear these eerie screaming noises. Those are sounds of Eurasian swifts. And they weren't filming in Europe, so I have no idea who decided to pipe in that bird noise, but it happened.
Wow.
And then this episode, not only did it have the swifts, but it also had loons singing in the bayou, which closest breeding loons are like in Minnesota. So that wouldn't really work out. And then lastly, as they were in the bayou, they played the classic noise that everyone knows with jungle noises. It's that weep weep, which is a bird found in the Amazon called a screaming piha. So there were bird noises from three different continents, none of which aligned with the bayou of Louisiana. So,
and the music wasn't particularly Cajun.
No. Oh, did you guys notice at the end when they packed all the dudes into the truck, the background music they were playing was a variation on the theme from season two, that do do.
Oh, you know,
do,
I might have.
Do.
I didn't notice that because I don't understand the theme for season two.
I don't either, but it was playing. I was like, oh yeah, that was, I guess that was the theme. Anyways, I thought this episode, despite the extreme number of gratuitous explosions, really sucked. I give this one a 3. Not a fan.
Wow, dude.
You know, it had Into the Woods, but unfortunately they sullied Into the Woods with weird flashbacks that were just dumb. They glossed over the fact that Walker had PTSD and just said that he had a fishing weekend and he was fine. I gave the last one a 5, and the last one was much better than this one.
There were flashbacks in last week's episode, so why don't you go that hard on last week's episode? I think you're just contradicting yourself, and you're just a sad case of maybe you had a bad week or something. But yeah, I think, you know, honestly, the only reason I couldn't go so high on last week's episode was if I was just going to watch that one, I would be left disappointed. But we actually get the conclusion in this episode and a ridiculously supercharged recap, which I'm not going to take into account for rating purposes, but you get a more complete story in this episode, a fuller fleshed out evil bad guy portrayed perfectly, in my opinion. You see Walker go crazy in the woods, use his bandana as a sling, take out bad guys. There were more explosions in this one. No helicopter, but that's fine.
No super shot.
Yeah,
and but I wanted Trivette to be way more badass in this episode, and he wasn't.
But the dynamic between Trivette and CD in this two-part episode was with more respect, I think, than they usually give Trivette. For the first part, I gave it a 6. I'm going to stay with 6. This would be a good primer for someone if they were going to watch Walker.
I think I gave the first part a 7, and a big part of that was like really hoping that it was going to close out really well. I think it closed out okay, but not enough to go higher than that. And in fact, I think it kind of drags it down. So I actually had a 6 for this one too. I did love the Big Lebowski, man. Come on.
Yeah, he definitely breathed some serious life into this.
Yeah, but he was more like, I don't know, the really good bad guys on these shows are like completely over the top and all of that. This guy was like understated, creepy, like actual movie bad guy. Exactly. Not like quoting the Bible, riding around cackling or with some crazy voice or something else.
I'll give you that. But when he got raised up by that hydraulic lift in the back of the truck, he was all sad. Like,
It was pretty funny.
That, yeah. That,
and then you haven't seen the last of me.
That was pretty great too. So, and I actually remember we watched this a couple of years ago down in Nashville. And I remember watching both parts and got to like, you know, an hour into it.
And we're like, oh, this is a two-parter.
Yeah, we didn't realize. I'm like, God, this is boring. Like, what the hell? Like, they've got this great bad guy. Why is this? So if you watch this whole episode at once, kind of a snooze fest is my recollection.
It's kind of like fishing.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of like that.
A lot of waiting around for action that may or may not happen.
A gar.
Oh, my God, an alligator gar? Incredible. Yeah. All right, well, that gives this episode a roundhouse rating of 5 boots to the face. I think we can all agree that no gift on earth can beat a brand new sidearm wrapped in sparkly paper. Yeah. But let us know what you think on social media or by emailing us at roundhouseroulette@gmail.com. When we come back, we'll spin that roundhouse roulette wheel, select next week's episode. And we're back. Bob, you ready to spin that thing?
Full contact. A young kickboxing champion is framed for murder, so Walker teaches him a few bone-breaking moves while clearing the youth's name.
Nice.
That sounds like it could be ridiculous.
You think Jean-Claude Van Damme's in this one?
No, I think the actor who plays the kickboxer is in like other TV shows. I'm tempted to look it up right now, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, don't. This should be interesting.
All right, well, we hope you'll join us next week when we share our reactions to Season 5, Episode 16, Full Contact. Share your opinions with us on Facebook and on Instagram at Roundhouse Roulette and on Twitter at Roundhouse Pod. And rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your fine podcasts. Thank you for listening, and until next week,
may the eyes of the ranger be upon you.
When your Texas look behind you, where the ranger's gonna be.
I'm gonna feed you to my gerbils.